My name is Andrew, member of 40K Fight Club, Adeptus Fanaticus.
And I am Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase. And today we start our first episode in a series of how you paint figures on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome back to Season 4, the real Episode 12 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And I said the real Episode 12 because I happened to notice I screwed up posting the last episode, and for about a week or so it said that the last episode was Episode 12 and it really should have been Episode 11, but blah, blah, blah. This is the real Episode 12. And what we're doing here, I got Andrew back on, who's actually a very good figure painter, definitely a lot better than I am. And we're going to take you, on this episode, like I said, it's going to be a series. So the first one here, we're going to go through kind of leading up to painting, and then talk about some of the basic painting techniques. That's kind of what we're going to cover on this episode. Also do a fun little competition where we're going to got five different types of spray primers over there to use in your figures. So kind of compare those, see what works in what categories, and kind of give an overall winner of, you know, what's the best of those five primers. Okay. We'll do that in just a minute. First thing I want to talk about a little bit is kind of the theory behind figure painting in some way. And say, you know, what is a novice painter versus a good painter versus an expert painter? Mm. Obviously, a novice painter is someone, this is the first time they've sat down and painting figures. And in reality, I think painting figures seems really intimidating.
Yeah.
But it's not a huge step to go from a novice painter to a good painter.
No, it just takes a lot of practice and time for it.
And what I mean by good painters, this is like about what I consider myself to be. They usually come with a fully painted army, and at least under, what I say, normal miniature wargame viewing angles and distances, the figures are going to look pretty good. So, you know, you can see generally the paint's in the right spot, the colors don't really clash too much with each other. And granted, you know, if you go up close to the figures, you might see, for example, on some of my warjacks, the rivets aren't all equally, they're like not equally sized. The paint runs a little bit. But like I said, under normal miniature wargame, you know, situations, you're really not going to notice that. And I think what kind of takes it to be a good painter, per se, is the things that matter are, one, I call color matching. This is kind of my branch of color theory in terms of when picking main colors for your army, what colors go good together? Mm-hmm. It's very easy to pick two colors that clash, and your figures look downright ugly. Yeah. Like, let's try hot pink and yellow.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of badly painted Space Marines. I've seen pink dwarves before.
Yep. Space Marines are the army that every 12-year-old plays.
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, so a few comments on that are, one, if you've never painted figures before, maybe consider running with what the stock paint job that they, you know, the company recommends for that faction. Almost, you can almost always find books, usually, I don't know, Games Workshop, every codex says, try these colors for the faction. I know the War Machine rulebook has the recommended colors. Yep. Of course, they all sell their own products, but that's just what they do.
Yeah.
And I think the other interesting thing you can do is, if you don't want to use the stock paint colors, look towards nature. There's a lot of really beautiful animals who have absolutely beautiful matching colors. Yeah. I mean, like, both my lizardmen and my Tau forest tigers are kind of designed to look after poisonous rainforest animals, like, you know, reptiles and frogs you see in the rainforest, where you got kind of a dull greenish-brown coat, and then bright orange or red stripes to kind of make things stand out a little bit. So, you know, look to animals for different kind of color matching. Also, the other thing you need to think about, good painters have a basic understanding of, like, color shading.
Yeah.
Because to make your models look really good, you want to put multiple layers on any given surface. Yeah. You don't just want one simple coat. Just either give it maybe an effect of shadows or light or maybe dirt or wear. I mean, for example, most of my figures and most of the main color areas have 3 to 4 coats on them, usually a mix of dry brushing and washing. And you'll see, like, if you look up close, you'll see, you can sometimes see definitive, like, you know, separation between the layers. Sometimes you can't. Depends on how good I was that day. But still, that gives it a little bit of effect. You know, it doesn't give it a nice, smooth, even coating, which doesn't really look very realistic for kind of a miniature or even army in general. Yeah.
For something like this, the rock here for the front that I put on the model here, that's about, I would say when I did it, I put 5 to 6 layers on that. Just for a rock.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. I think the last part that a good painter knows how to do is just good brush control to keep the paint where it needs to be. Yeah. And that's really obviously, you know, important, but it takes practice to get, you know, the paint to stay in the right sections. Yeah. And, you know, the right areas are gold, the right areas are blue and such and such. And, you know, also enough paint control to do little details like the little bit of the rivets, the little leather pouches figures often carry, things like that. Then we, at some point, you're going to jump up to an expert painter, where not only does it expand on, you know, what I just talked about, better color matching, better color shading. Like, for example, how many layers do your knights over there have on them?
Probably, I would have to say about 3 to 4 layers each, because it's a simple, I mean, it's a simple coat. I do a showing here, I have a base coat underneath of what is called Storm Blue.
Yep.
What is Storm Blue right here? It's a paint that's not made anymore, unfortunately, by GW, so it's
We'll talk more
difficult.
About that later.
Yep. And so we go with Storm Blue, then we do a Enchanted Blue dry brush coat over that, and then I do a heavy, very, very liberal wash of the Badab Black, and then I go back in and highlight where I need to for that. So it's about 3 to 4 layers worth of work. Otherwise, it's depending on how much detail I go into it. Like for, say, the skull here, because I primed these black, I had to go in white, wash, white again, and in some areas I had to touch up on the wash where it didn't get into. So it's a lot of trial and error and having to go back in and fix things up if you can't get the right consistency for it.
Now, what about for your dad, who's obviously a professional painter? Does he, I mean, I know, like, you read about the War Machine rule, but they mentioned that you have, like, 10, 11 layers to get nice, even shading and cool little, like, highlights. Does your dad go that?
He does. He takes, I mean, for one model, I've seen him take almost 2 days to paint a single model just because he goes into all the detailing of it. I mean, it's pretty intense.
And when you get really good at that, you can really tell, because you can see the color changes from one, like, armor plate, from one side armor plate to another. You see a nice, smooth change, whereas mine, you'll see oftentimes definitive lines where you can tell where the different layers are.
Yeah.
And what about also, the other thing expert painters often start using is a lot of specialized tools, whether it be specialized brushes, specialized paint additives. Why don't you talk a little bit about some of those things?
All right, for,
Actually, 1 second, sorry, let me interrupt you. Right. Let me just say, just to compare, you know, expert versus good painter, I use about 4 different brushes. I have, like, a base coat brush, a somewhat detailed brush, a tiny brush, and a dry brushing brush. And then you will probably use a lot more than that for different pens and things, so go ahead.
Well, it depends for brushes. I know my dad has about 4 to 5 brushes. He's got a base coat brush, a dry brush, which is actually a little bit more frizzled up, but almost kind of used.
Dry brush is brutal on brushes.
Yeah, it's pretty beaten up, and once a beaten up brush gets to that state, it pretty much goes into the dry brush category. And from there, we go to detailing brushes, like something like this. I use a spotter. It's a the bristles are red sable. Red sable brushes are probably the highest, if not the highest quality brushes out there, just because the bristles last exceptionally long. And
this is a really fine brush.
It's a really
small
details. Yeah, this one is a really fine detailing small brush. Although for a lot of these models that I've painted here, pretty much most of the time I've used this most of the time for it. Just because it goes with personal style, you know, what you personal preference, what you feel suits your hand best, steadiness, all of that. These two brushes I mainly use in a combination of either dry brushing or if I got a wider space, like, say, this cloak, for example. This cloak, for example, was I would use a brush like I would probably say like this, just because of the fact that it's a little bit thinner on the bristle here than it is here. This one I use mostly for, I mean, you can tell on this one because the bristles are stained. That's a white sable nylon brush.
Okay.
And that's stained, so you can tell that it's been washed.
Number 234, is that like the size number they use? Or no, that's here, this is number one
brush. This is a number 0.
Okay, so that's number 0 brush.
Yeah, that's a number 0 brush.
So the blue stain one is a 0 brush, number 1 is the other.
Yep, that's the other one. And the spotter is, the one that I use is a 20/0, so that's a really fine spotter. Specifically, it's Princeton. It's a Princeton art and brush, so these brushes usually are very expensive. However, they are not as expensive as the GW brushes. Those usually run about, what, $8?
$8, $9 a piece,
Each one probably runs about $6.
Okay.
So.
And what about some of the paint additives? Like, talk about
like the retardants and the additives. All right. There are certain additives that a lot of experts will use, like say your paint is too thin. Well, in order to combat that, we'll put in things like a like a paint retarder, which thickens it up a little bit, but not too much. And when you do that, you don't want to put it into the pot of paint because that'll mess up your entire pot. Mm-hmm. You only want to do that when you have it out in your palette. And it'll thicken it up a little bit, make it a little bit more consistent. It won't be as runny as you'd like it. Now, unless you want it to be runny, it depends on what area you're painting, obviously. Other things like a paint thinner. If your paint is obviously too thick, you can put paint thinner in it. It'll thin it up just a little bit, just enough, so that way you can get a nice, smooth coat on there. It won't be so clumpy and things like that, you know, because sometimes with the paints, you know, you can get little clumps on them, or sometimes even bubbles might appear, depending on the consistency of the paint.
Okay. And so that's, I guess, one more thing else to mention. What's a wet palette?
A wet palette is, it's basically a normal palette that has little pouches for the paint that you put them in. Okay. But a wet palette is specifically designed to keep the paint wet. If you, say, you make custom mixes between different colors, you can save that. You can save what you mix there so it won't dry up. And it's got a little cover on it, so it'll enclose itself, and whatever you mixed it's saved.
Okay. All right. So that way, yeah. So from day to day, you don't have to remix the paint. Okay. Makes sense.
Yep.
Okay. Why don't we, that's a quick overview of some of the techniques you would use in painting figures. Let's move on to the first and somewhat important step is how do you prepare your figures and how do you assemble them? So we'll do that right now. All right, back to the first step, which, of course, is preparing and assembling your figures. Now, also, obviously, before you even get to painting or even assembling, there's a few steps you want to do to make sure your figures are ready for assembly. So we've got two sets we're working with here. One, we've got a plastic sprue from the actual Games Workshop's Battle for Skull Pass set to give you an idea of how you work with plastic figures. And then over here, I have a War Machine blister, which is my Signar Spire figure. It's not Spire, Squire. My Signar and Squire figure. Let's say that right. Okay. So what are the steps we're going to take first for the plastic figures? How do we get them ready for painting?
All right. First, we got to get them off the sprue, which we use a pair of plastic clippers here, or sometimes even wire clippers are acceptable. So let me clip off.
Is there a certain brand or size I like to use? I just kind of handed those to you.
I have a smaller one, smaller grips. But these still work pretty decently. I gotta just get it in the clip here. I get one here that's on the side, be easier to get off.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a smaller pair of those.
There we go.
You can get those from pretty much any hardware store. So you don't have to buy the expensive ones like GW cells, which are like probably $300.
No, they all work very well. All you do if you go to GW is just you're buying a name.
Yeah. What's the next step? So off the sprue,
it off the sprue. The next step is to clean the model. Well, for me anyways, it's to clean the model off of these annoying mold lines and mold chunks that are on the model from when they came out of the plastic molds from when they were made. And for that, you can either do it one of two ways. A lot of people, for plastic models, they like to use X-Acto blades.
Yeah, it's kind of you can hear stuff rattling around in there right now. We don't want to open that case up, but that's an X-Acto blade in there.
Yeah. Some people use X-Acto blades for plastic. They don't traditionally like to use what I like to use, which are files.
Okay.
And I have a file set here. And there's probably a lot of green crap on those. That's from the putty.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, these are pretty much just kind of small, standard files.
Yep. Yep, get those at Hobby Store. You could even get those at Lowe's or Home Depot, I believe. Okay. Me and my dad, we got our sets. We actually bought like four sets at a train show.
Oh, okay.
So you can get those at a train convention if you want.
And there's different sizes and shapes here. Yep. Do you use different like shapes or different circumstances?
It depends.
What do you use for cleaning the
model? What I use most of the time is this kind of oblong style. This oblong style of...
Like a flat rectangle, pretty much.
Not really. You can feel it.
It's a little bowed out.
Yeah, it's got a little bulge to it in the center.
Someone has a cylinder and took a hammer to it, pretty much.
Sort of, yeah.
Better than a flat rectangle, I guess.
Yeah, it's better than a flat rectangle because you can get the kind of, you can get this precision curve on your file here when you're filing down these obnoxious mold lines. It really, really bugs me, mold lines. I hate seeing mold lines on people's models. It's just a really bad... It's just bad.
So then, okay, so after you go through and get all the mold lines off, is it time to assemble, or is there anything else you want to do beforehand?
Pretty much all I do is I go through, get the mold lines off, make sure it's pretty much cleaned at that point. Then I assemble, like, say there are multiple parts. Mm-hmm. You know, these goblins, they're only one part. But if there's multiple parts, I clean each individual part before putting it together.
Okay.
Then I glue it together and put it into the base.
Do you ever paint them before you assemble, or you almost always assemble?
I almost always assemble them. The only thing I never paint... Well, actually, I will say it depends on the model. It always depends on the model. Like, for Manfred here, I assembled him... First, I painted the horse separate from the torso.
Okay.
So I had to prime them separate and paint them separate. It's just because of the amount of detail in the model and obviously the size.
Yeah.
I couldn't get into the certain areas that I needed to. It depends on the model.
So once you've got it assembled, anything else left to do? Is it time to prime and paint?
Once it's assembled and glued into the base, it's pretty much ready to paint or to prime.
What type of glue do you like to use in the plastic models?
For me, for plastic modeling, I use a plastic model cement glue. Let me unroll this here since it's been used up a lot. It's a plastic model cement glue. It's by Ross Company. It used to be a Michigan company, but I don't know where they're at now. But I've always used their plastic modeling glue, and it's very good. I like using it more than the GW glue myself.
Does that pretty much kind of set almost instantly when you...
It's not instant. It takes a little bit of time, but not too much. It takes about a good 45 seconds for it to set. 45 seconds, so it's not too bad. And so then after that, the only other thing to do before the before you prime it is if you've got any other custom stuff you want to do to it, modeling, if you want to cover in some cracks in some of your models, like, say, you have a Land Raider Crusader and there's a crack in between one of the walls or joints, you fill it up with something. I know Games Workshop has their green stuff.
Let me just comment on the GW green stuff. It is ridiculously overpriced.
It is.
I mean, granted, the Games Workshop stuff is normally overpriced, but the green stuff is just horrific. Go buy it from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Try and get it from an independent retailer.
And what do you have right here?
What I have here is what is called fast-drying green putty. Please note the warning flammable vapor and
That's in all our paint products. Every one of our paint products can kill us if we breathe it in enough.
Yeah, but this is very, very smelly. So,
don't open it.
It's but anyways, it's a clay. It's not like the green stuff, so it's not, you know, that hard rubberish kind of feel to it. This is more clayish. That's got an easier, smooth.
It flows easier.
It flows easier.
Yeah, filling cracks easier.
Filling the cracks and whatnot, and you don't have to worry about it overflowing. If say you put too much in one of the cracks, you can easily file over it once it hardens. It's that easy to file over it. I mean, you can see here on some of my files here, there's a lot of green on them. That's because I put green on all of them, and that's how I actually painted, formed the rock. That's on the front of my Manfred model.
Now, one comment on some of the other plastic glues is other brands out there, like you mentioned, Games Workshop. Yeah. Also, I think Testers, I use there from time to time. It's pretty good.
Yep.
The one thing I found with the Games Workshop, it doesn't always work on everything for some reason.
No, it doesn't.
It's really, their Games Workshop branded plastic glue is a little bit different than, say, their super glue, which is pretty much similar to other super glues out there. It's really designed for the plastic material they use for their figures. It's maybe different than somebody else. I know, like, on my Arcane Legions figures, it did not work for a lot of whole things together.
And if you got some of the new War Machines plastic figures like the Warjacks and everything.
Yeah, they're weird though. They're like plastic resin almost. Some weird hybrid mix. I don't know what they are.
So the plastic there won't necessarily. It might react differently to that kind of a plastic.
Okay, what about metal figures here? How do you? Because obviously they're already off the sprue.
Yeah.
But you still probably got to go through and look for little flashings and mold lines. Yeah. They're going to be there.
Same process and setup. You go through opening it, and sometimes there are sprues like for little. Small pieces, like I know for my Tyranid Zonthrope, it had the two little arm pieces on a sprue, so I had to take those off. But yeah, same exact process going through it. of cleaning it and all of that.
Do you like to wash your models? I know, for example, some people wash metal models in like soap and water beforehand.
Yes and no. It depends, really. Not all the time.
It's awesome. Yeah. That's kind of an optional step.
It's optional for me and my dad, at least.
And, of course, there's a whole bunch of different super glues out there you can use to assemble metal models. Games Workshop makes it so that a bunch of third-party companies make the same thing at half the price.
Yeah.
Actually, I think Games Workshop super glue, the giant bottle, is not that bad of a price.
The super glue that me and my dad use, we get from a hobby shop, Great Lakes Hobby.
Oh, those things are cheaper, though. Sorry,
we get a two-part epoxy super glue.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, it's a two-part epoxy. The thing hardens. It's so nice because basically, it makes it into a rock.
How long does it take to set?
Not too long, about 2 minutes maybe. Okay. But it hardens really well. Just make sure when you put it, like say you see you have these things here at the bottom where you put the slots in for your models. If you've got a metal model on one of these, the epoxy will form on the bottom here for a nice smooth kind of closed off piece.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's about all we got to talk about for the metal models, I think. So, want to go ahead and start working with primers and do a little primer competition?
Let's do it.
Time for the great primer showdown. I got 5 different types of primer here we're going to test out and several tests to see, you know, which one has basically the overall best value kind of thing for your miniatures. First up is Touch and Tone All-Purpose Household Spray Paint. This is the cheapest primer you can find. I'm pretty confident it's never been intended to be used anywhere near miniature wargame figures. It costs $1.19 for 10 ounces, which comes out to be around 12 cents an ounce. That's definitely the cheapest one out here, so it wins in that category. next up, we've got first an auto primer. This is actually a general purpose primer designed for basically automotive bodies for automotive paint jobs. Mm. One note on auto primers. Some brands of auto primers are called, like, scratch and gouge removal. I'm pretty sure you do not want to use those in miniature wargame figures because our figures have lots of scratches and gouges intentionally for detail.
I know.
Just keep that in mind when you buy, if you actually go the route of the auto primers. This one was $3 for 10 ounces, so it comes in at around 30 cents an ounce. Next up, this is the one you brought here. Yep. This is the Rust-Oleum Painter's Touch. It's a white primer. You want to talk a little bit about that, or is it just...
It's basically just a plain white flat primer. Normally, I use white Krylon. Unfortunately, I'm having issues finding it at Walmart at Meijer's. So the second type of primer that me and my dad use for our miniatures is the Rust-Oleum Painter's Touch. It's worked out pretty good so far. I mean, most of them to use this kind of a primer, if not Krylon.
And that costs $3.50 for 12 ounces,
yes.
Right? Okay, which comes out to be around 29 cents an ounce, so similar value to the auto body primer. Then, ironically, not the most expensive one is Games Workshop primer, clocking in around 10 ounces for $15.
Because
this is the Chaos Black color, which they do have a white one as well. It's supposedly, the GW employees is the best primer out there. It's the most amazing stuff ever. And then coming in the most expensive is the tiny can of Tester's primer. I think it was about $5 to $6 for around 3 ounces. So it comes in at about $1.66 per ounce.
Wow.
So after the first test, we're going to say go in order just in terms of price. The cheap crap obviously wins that round, followed by, we'll give it to the Rust-Oleum, then Autobody, then GW, and then Testers. Okay. Now can the real test. First is going to be drying time. We're going to go out there, do one model at a time, and how it's going to work is, we'll say every 30 seconds to a minute, we'll basically check the figure, maybe touch it a little bit to see if there's any primer comes off, and kind of decide, you know, how long did it take for the primer to dry. Mm-hmm. We'll do that for each of them. And then we'll do a detail test. We'll kind of fit, both of us will examine the... the 5 models we're going to do. We got 5 pretty much identical models and see which ones we think reserve the detail the best.
Yep.
And finally, the last test is going to be we're going to mix up one little amount of paint here and just go over each of the models and just kind of see, you know, which one has the paint go on the best. So we'll go outside and we'll start doing some of the priming and test the, go outside, do some of the priming and test the drying times.
All right, almighty and semi-powerful. I only say that because of the test stores over there.
They cracked that one open.
Whew. Smelly?
Yeah, it's worse than Games Workshop, which is
holy crap, it is. It's nice. Wow.
Hey. Thought I was going to get high off the Games Workshop stuff. All right, go.
We're back from outside. We are done testing both the application and drying time, which, by the way, as we do in this show, we're changing the rules as we go. we actually add a new category, which is kind of the application process in terms of how well did the paint go or the primer go on in the models? Mm-hmm. What other kind of experiences do we have that could cause problems?
Smell.
So let's rate them from starting with the Rust-Oleum, I think, is the one you liked the best. Mm-hmm. Why did you like that one the best for... application.
I liked it the best because, one, it didn't smell when I sprayed it because of the fact that the test stores and the GW primer smelled horribly.
And it went on the figure really easily. You didn't use a lot of it, right?
Nope. Yeah, I didn't.
Okay.
Yep, whenever I prime, I don't use a lot. I always go burst.
And then the GW primer.
GW primer went on pretty... It went on well. The only problem is the stench. The GW primer smells.
Yeah.
I mean, you smelled it all the way from the other side of the. Not as bad as
the tester's primer, though.
Oh God, no.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh my God.
So then we move on to the Bright Touch Auto Body Primer. Why was that like third in line?
That one went on okay. I mean, it didn't smell as bad as the GW primer. The only problem was it just was a little sticky. I mean, there were a couple spots that were a little runny, but it wasn't that bad.
So it's probably not really designed for this fine detail.
No.
What about testers? Why was that? Did that require a lot of primer? Or was that just because it smelled so bad?
That one just smelled horribly bad. That and also, at first I couldn't tell if it was actually going on it.
Because it's almost the same color as the plastic.
Yeah, it's the same color as the plastic, so I wasn't sure if it was actually going on the model or not. And I couldn't tell also because, I mean, you can see the shininess of it. I couldn't tell if it was runny or whatnot.
Okay.
So that, I just couldn't tell.
What about the Touch Tone cheap crap? Why was so bad about that one? Application process.
It's Touch Tone. Touch and Tone.
That's a phone kind. That's
yeah. It was really runny when I was spraying it, and I was watching how it was going on. It was really sticky. It was, it's not even worth it.
Okay. So let's move on to the drying time. In last place, let's see, was actually the auto body primer, which took around 4 minutes to become where you could touch the figure without, you know, worrying about getting it stuck in your face.
Yeah.
Stuck in your finger. So we're putting the fingers up to our face. Then tied for about 3 minutes each was Rust-Oleum and testers. They tied that. And then actually second place, ironically, was the touch and tone coming in at 2 minutes.
Yeah. That was surprising.
And first place coming in would be the GW primer. Actually, it only took about a minute to dry.
Yeah.
So that definitely obviously took first place by quite a margin there.
Yeah, that's the one thing about GW that's been consistent is their dry time.
So next thing I'm going to do, we're take a moment here and just kind of look over the details, see what we like, we like and what we don't like about the in terms of the prime jobs. We'll come back in just a minute and give us our results. Well, we've completed our analysis. Andrew, want to go over the results of what we found for the primer types?
For the two here, the Touch Tone and the Bright Touch, these two, as far as capturing the detail, they do okay, except in some areas. I mean, it's not some of the coverage. I mean, I can see some spots that are a little bit, like here on the on that piece of the head cap, it looks almost a little chunky.
Yeah.
Almost. And that one's from the Bright Touch here. This one for the touch and tone, I'm just not liking the way it looks. I mean, I can't really tell.
And just also with the touch and tone, this is as you notice here when we're doing a little test, it, right as soon as the, you put the primer on, you can, it can come off really easily if you're not careful.
Yeah, it came off really, really easy. It was very runny.
I mean, I think these, I mean, they're not bad. They're not like super great, but then it's not like they're really destroying the detail. They just don't bring it out super well. So those two are kind of the bottom of the line, which brings us to the next three, which are, in a lot of ways, kind of similar. They're not the significant difference between the Games Workshop, the Rust-Oleum, and the Testers brand.
Yeah, that's a nice thing to see, because a lot of these three primers, you know, I mean, the Rust, Testers and the Games Workshop smelled horrific, but they came out pretty good as well as the Rust-Oleum. Because, I mean, as you can see right here, the Rust-Oleum captures a lot of the detailing here. Because I know that I've gotten issues with the clumping up. As you can see right there, there's chainmail. I've had issues where sometimes the primer has kind of destroyed some of that. Now, and clump that up.
One note about the Rust-Oleum there, you notice it brings out the mold lines quite a bit.
Yeah, that's why you have to be careful with mold lines and all of that, and you can even see that here.
I don't know, is that necessarily the Rust-Oleum, or is the fact that it's a white color?
Because
I don't see it in the GW one, but the GW one's the black.
Yeah, because I know that one hasn't been cleaned, but I think it also has something to do with the color.
Okay.
With the color of the primer. So if you're gonna do white, make sure you have your mold lines cleared, because they will show any kind of bright color. I mean, even on the gray here, you can see some mold lines across this piece right here on the foot and knee.
Okay, but all in all, they're about the same.
Yeah, they're about the same, and the GW really surprised me because of the. Of my previous experience with Games Workshop.
Tell us a little bit about your previous experience at GW and why you don't use that.
Me and my dad, last time we used a Games Workshop primer, it literally ate away at the models.
This is like 6 years ago, right?
Yeah, this was back around when the codec for the Tyranids came out that first had the Red Terror and Old One-Eye in it.
That was like two codexes ago.
That was two codexes ago, and after that, me and my dad never used Games Workshop again, and we just try and stay away from it. Also, the price now doesn't help.
Yeah, it's still not the most expensive, but it's pretty expensive.
Yeah, and we still get good results from our primers. Yeah. So,
all right. So anyway, for the last test we're going to do, we're going to mix up a batch of paint. Let's just choose what color you want to use. We'll kind of run over each of the models to see how well the actual typical hobby paint is going to stick to the various primers, right? Mm-hmm. We finished doing a base coat on each of the primers. Angela, you want to talk about each of them and how they worked for us?
Well, you want to go highest or
lowest?
Let's start
with highest. So let's go with the Rust-Oleum first, the highest scoring one.
For the highest scoring one, the Rust-Oleum Painter's Touch Primer, the base coat, in my opinion, went on very, very smoothly.
There wasn't many trouble with the paint moving around after you put it down.
No.
It didn't really thin out too much.
Nope.
There's no really visible brush strokes too much.
Nope. So. And another thing, too, is I put on a second layer on the back part of it. The paint didn't move around, because I know that some primers will have that kind of effect on your paint when you're applying it, because when you put one base coat on and then you try putting a second base coat on, it'll move the paint around. Yeah. And it didn't do that.
Let's move on to GW. That is next in line. Very similar in a lot of ways, except there's a few parts of the paint did thin just a tiny little bit. Not hugely noticeable, and, you know, maybe you could work, maybe do kind of artistic work with it. It's kind of a matter of opinion, but it went on pretty good. Probably the fact that we're combining GW paints with GW primer probably helped too.
Yeah, that's always a thing to consider is the paints that are meant to go with each other and those kinds of aspects.
Interesting in line next would be touch and tone.
Yeah,
the cheap stuff.
That was really surprising.
I guess because it's similar to the Autobody, right? I mean, performance-wise, they're pretty similar.
Yeah, they were pretty similar. The biggest thing that it got more so was the fact that it didn't thin as much.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they both are a little bit clumpy, but in some areas, the only thing is it didn't thin out as badly as this one did, I would say.
And also, the auto body one kind of showed the brush strokes a little bit more.
Yeah, you could definitely see where the brush stroke went.
And then, interestingly enough, in last place was testers. And this may be an equipment issue, per se, but
I think the biggest problem is it a very uneven coat. The paint moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, why I say equipment issue is testers has their own brand of paints, and they're oil-based paints, where GW is acrylic-based paints. It may have just been simply that fact that we were using acrylic-based paints on a primer that maybe was intended for oil-based paints. That's why it didn't stick as well. But for in the situation we're using, it's definitely probably the worst in terms of getting nice, even coats.
Yeah, I would definitely say not to go with that.
Yeah. And now we're moving on to the actual, ready to start showing off some of the paint techniques, right?
Yep.
So what do you want to show off? Just kind of list the three or four things we're going to talk about here.
A couple of things that I'm going to go over with is I'm going to be painting skin toning for goblins, for these goblins here, using this one here. I'm going to be going over the base coat, the washing technique and overcoating technique, and a little bit of highlighting along with that. So that's probably what I'm going to be focusing on is skin toning.
So we're going to start with the base, I guess the base coat then?
Base coat.
Let's get that set up.
Dark Angel's Green right here.
Now it should be time for Andrew to show some painting techniques off, but I forgot to go and talk about the final results of our primer test. Let's jump back and do that quickly. Tie for last place was actually the testers and the auto body primer. Those lost a lot of paints, one for drying time. They're kind of two of the slowest to dry.
Yeah.
Also, we mentioned the issue with the Games Workshop paint and the testers primer and the issues there. And, of course, the awful smell for testers didn't help either.
No, it didn't.
Coming in third place, interesting enough, was the touch and tone. I keep saying that wrong. Touch and tone primer, which is a cheap crap. Which probably got boosted up for two reasons. One, it's cheap, so that scored it a lot of points, which may have balanced it, skewed it a little bit. And also, the drying time was pretty good at about 2 minutes, which probably skewed it a little bit as well. So, it's still not that great of a primer where it matters. It actually scored pretty low in the basically the three categories that matter, but because of the fact that it's cheap and dried quick, it kind of got a higher score.
Mm-hmm.
Second place was Games Workshop, all around scoring generally pretty high marks except for the price. It finished first or second in every category except for the price. And then first place was the Rust-Oleum paint, which performed actually pretty well except for the drying time where it wasn't that great. Everything else had scored first or second. So Rust-Oleum came out just a little bit above GW, but not by much. Maybe the fact that it's so much cheaper, it may be a valid opportunity or valid option for you guys to choose.
Yeah.
I'll start me now. Okay. Andrew, jump over to paint time.
All right.
Tell us what you're going to do and explain which steps you take as you go through the process.
All right. First off, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing skin toning. We're going to be working on this Night Goblin, I believe it's a Shaman, Night Goblin Shaman skin tones. So the first step that we're going to be doing is we're going to take some Dark Angel's Green here and we're going to start applying it. Now, the brush that I'm using is my 20/0 spotter. That's just a personal preference, mind you. You can use whichever one you want. Preferably, you know, one of these smaller, thinner types of brushes. But it all comes down to personal preference. And you just start pretty much taking taking the green and putting it on all the skin areas for the goblin.
Nice giving coat. A fairly even coat of the Dark Angel's Green at the moment.
Giving it a fairly even coat of the Dark Angel's Green, making sure to get into the cracks and crevices here. Can't really see much because he's got that huge hood over his head.
Hmm. And this is the kind of technique you'd pretty much apply to any surface, or is it more of just for actual skin toning?
Pretty much to any surface, really. That's really how it goes for base coating most of the time, is you'll just want to get an even layer over it. It can be applied to any kind of surface, even, obviously for the cloak on the back. I'll go here on the skin tone.
Okay, so base coat is done.
Yep.
What's next?
All right, next step is to put on a overcoat. And what I'm going to do for that, because I don't have Snot Green, which I would normally use for Goblin overcoating, I'm going to mix what we have here is Dark Angel's Green, which I used for the base coat, and I'm going to mix some Rotting Flesh in it.
Just kind of lighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, just to lighten it up a little bit. So I'm taking a cut-up sprue bit here, and I'm going to scrape out some of the Dark Angel's Green here and put it into a little pot right here.
So how come you use a sprue bit and not, say, your brush?
I know some people do that. I just find it easier because, you know, you don't have to worry about cleaning up the end of your brush and all that other stuff. And this obviously worked out pretty well right there, and all you got to do is...
Like, what about like using the bristle end of your brush? Is that just a bad idea?
That is a bad idea. Okay. I would definitely not recommend that because that's an easy way to clump up the paint on your bristles and ruin it really quickly a little bit.
Now, do you normally mix water with your paints when you put them down? Or
sometimes.
It depends, because I noticed like every paint kind of has a little bit different consistency to it. Even among the GW paints, certain colors are thicker than others, and I guess it kind of varies on paint-to-paint
basis. It varies on a paint-to-paint basis. Some are a little bit thicker than they need to be. Some are a little bit thinner than they need to be. It really depends, and we've got right now a really, really good color mix right here. So I'm going to go with that.
Look at the camera?
So, yep. Got a really good good color on that one.
Oh, that's it. Try that again.
So we got that.
And what paints do you normally use? Do you normally use GW paints?
Me and my dad, we use a mix of Games Workshop paints. We use a mixture of the Reaper paints that Reaper Miniatures puts out right here.
Old school
over here.
Though. There it is.
And this, yep.
Yeah, they have
the writer's paints, the older ones in these bottles here. Or yeah, the Reaper paints. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the old hobby shop that's no longer there. They have metal, at least what I thought were metal balls in there to help it mix up. They're still in there to help it mix up, but what I didn't know was they were skulls, little metal pewter skulls in there to help mix it up. So, let's see that. It's a metal skull there that rolls around in the paint jar to help mix it up. And another type of paint that we like to use is Privateer Press.
Okay.
What they have out for their War Machines and Hordes models. So, I'm going to start doing here, start collecting up some of this mix that we have here and start to base coat here. Or overcoat some of it. Now it's almost the same color, but it's a little bit brighter, just a little bit brighter.
And it's usually when you go for layers, you want to make minute changes because, like, you know, if you have too big of a change, you can really see it.
Yeah, it becomes very, very prominent, and a lot of the times you do not want that to happen. You want to layer on the slight changes.
Are you going over, like, the entire area you already went over again, or what are you doing differently?
I am going over the entire area. The only time that I do not go over what I have covered is when I'm doing highlighting, and, pretty much highlighting, and sometimes, depending on what area I cover, dry brushing over the top. Like, say, if I wanted to accentuate the muscles on a bicep, for instance, I would just do a quick dry brush over the top of those muscles, so that way it would only hit that part of the bicep.
So essentially you're just replacing the color underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So, I guess, in all honesty, what was the point, then, of doing the first coat?
Sometimes when you do the first coat, you can get it to slightly show through.
Okay.
So there is a little bit of an undertone to that, and that's the effect that we're trying to go for.
So have you thinned this paint down a little bit again at all?
Yes and no. This paint right here is actually what it's doing with the first base coat that I put on. It's blending it. It's getting it to get more of a blend on there.
All right.
So, and now what I'm going to do is instead of adding the rotting flesh to the Dark Angel's Green, I'm actually going to do the opposite.
Okay.
Because I want to have a lighter color on there now. All right. Now we go into our mixed paint here. I'm actually going to take from our mixed paint and mix some of that into the lighter here. And you can see it's starting to brighten it up even right there.
So your mixed paint's on top, your original paint was on top, and on bottom you have the new mix, the new color, right?
Yep, this is the new color that we're going to use to highlight the skin toning.
Okay. So when you say highlighting, you're just kind of picking out certain areas?
Dry brush over the flat areas.
Okay, so actually you're doing a bit of a dry brush style.
It's a bit of a dry brush, but also highlighting too at the same time.
And I guess dry brush, in case you just don't know, it's your brush in the paint, and then you actually wipe off almost all the paint off the brush.
Yep.
And therefore, when you go over the surface, what's going to happen is the raised areas are going to collect the paint, and the recessed areas are not. Therefore, we're giving, you know, whatever color you dry brush, and the higher areas are going to actually take the new color. So this way, by having the lighter color being dry brush on top, the raised areas are going to be light. The shadow kind of valley areas between the fingers and in the mouth and things are going to be darker and reflect shadows.
The one thing that is going to happen to this goblin is I think he might come out looking more like a zombie.
Well, that's the color.
I know. And that's one thing for you viewers is I don't normally play goblins, although I know how to paint them because my dad plays orcs and goblins. I paint undead creatures, so I do a lot of zombie painting.
You should replace all your little zombies with goblin zombies.
I had thought about that. I have some empire zombies. This is probably as good as it's going to get right now, because you can see here it looks pretty fleshy.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. And that's a really good flesh tone for the hand.
Thraka green. Yeah, the Thraka green is a wash. Yes. What is a wash?
A wash is something that basically, you apply it to a surface with cracks and details in it that you want to bring out of the model. You bring, like, say, I'll... You might have... I just put it in here.
Yeah, go ahead. All right. Whatever.
You see, it'll do this, and it brings out a lot of the features here.
And I guess also, a wash is a very thin paint, right?
Yeah, it's very thin. Mm-hmm. It's very watered down. There's also additives in it in a wash, so that way it can sink into the cracks easier.
And here we're using a pre-made GW wash, but if you want to, there are ways you can create your own washes.
Yeah, I've actually had to...
We'll discuss that more later, but different additives you can add.
Yep. And as you can see, the wash really brought out a lot of the features of this idol here on the staff.
Because the wash kind of sinks into the dark area, as I mentioned, the recesses and that kind of, I guess... Not really highlight.
Makes
those more pronounced.
Yeah, makes it more predominant as well. So we'll get that in there. And whenever I wash, I usually do a very liberal wash. Nah, I'm not very conservative on any of my washes. That's how I was able to get the nice blue, dark bluish hue on my knights over there. As you can see here, the wash has sunk into the crevices of the fingers holding that staff, so it brings out those fingers it brings them out a lot better. And now that we've done that, let me add just a little bit of water here to our bright green here, so that way we can use it. If I had a wet palette, I wouldn't have to worry, but. Now we go in and pick out the hand. And just lightly draw on it. It's almost like drawing on a piece of paper. A piece of curved paper, which is somewhat difficult. What I did there was I drew on the outer portions here of kind of like the curved part of the hand to bring it out. As well as drew a couple of lines on the fingers and the thumb going around here. So, as you can see there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looks pretty good.
Just to bring out the features of the hand. And after going over the layers, I'd say that this looks pretty goblinish to me. Doesn't look like a zombie. So the Thraka green actually helped that. It darkened up the rotting flesh color. So, that looks pretty good to me. There's not that many. I mean, we covered pretty much all we needed to do. Never do what I just did there and leave your brush in the water.
Yeah, that's always good thing. It messes them up in a hurry.
Yeah.
So think here, we'll talk about what we're going to do in some of the future episodes of this series. The mention is kind of a series.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it maybe two episodes more, maybe one. I'm not quite sure. It depends how it all goes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably deal with what I'd say is painting a figure from start to finish. Because there's also a whole process of, you know, taking the various techniques and putting them in the right order.
Yep.
Especially when it comes to, you know, choosing, do you want to paint this stuff first? Do you want to paint that first?
Yep.
And also you show off cool things like doing rivets, doing fingernails, mm-hmm. small details like that.
Yep, that's one of my favorite things that I like to do is just fine detailing, and sometimes even for the eyes, I don't even use a paintbrush for the eyes.
Yep, and then we can show you things like pens and all sorts of cool stuff. Mm-hmm. So probably sometime in the future we'll get Andrew back on, actually do a whole show, probably dedicate to painting one or two figures and show you some really detailed stuff, show us each of some of our tricks, maybe talk a little about basing, things like that. In the meantime, the other shows we got coming up here, first of all, there is
HeroClix.
DC HeroClix. The new set was released just last week, so we'll definitely be doing a full review of that possibly next episode. Depends if all of the hobby store can get the darn thing in. But that's a whole other topic altogether.
I can't wait for that.
Yes. The other big news, I'm trying to pull it off my computer right here, is Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition. And if you've been following Games Workshop website, at the time we're filming this, there is a giant countdown timer, which will end, well, by the time you've seen this, it would have already ended. By the time we're filming this, it's going to end 1 day and 12 hours from now. We think that has to do something with, like, say, pre-ordering Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition, maybe some kind of preview weekend. Yep. So if we get if GW holds a preview weekend here, I'll definitely go down there. We'll definitely have to play some games. We'll be back to talk on it afterwards. So next episode basically is going to be either DC HeroClix or Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition, depending on what Games Workshop does in the next week.
Yeah.
So with that, I guess we're just about done finally with the show. Hopefully we gave you some basic tutorial about how you go from taking your figures out of the package and getting them all painted up. Well, starting to get them painted up.
Yeah.
But we'll continue it later on in the future. And of course, also as a side note for Warhammer 40,000, this whole spearhead thing coming out. I don't know what that is exactly. It's something to do with tanks and big tank formations, I guess. Yep. But maybe we'll talk about that later too. Regardless, I'm rambling like crazy now. So, all right. As usual, questions or comments, send them to me at jason@rockosoftware.com. That's rockosoftware.com. Twitter, @TT_Battlefield. And Steam, Rocker Robotics. If you want to play, obviously, Left 4 Dead, Dawn of War 2, Dawn of War 2 Chaos Rising, or because of last weekend's deal was Supreme Commander 2, I now have that as well. Those weekend deals are very dangerous, dangerous things.
They are.
And the fact they pop them up after you're done playing a game doesn't help either.
It doesn't.
Well, I'm still waiting for Bioshock 2 to come out in a weekend deal. I really want to get that game. And also, what was the other... Call of Duty 4,
yeah.
2, I'm not paying full price.
Yeah, Modern War 2 is coming out for that.
Anyway, you want to give out your Twitter? I actually don't know what it is, so I can tell you what it is.
I don't pay attention to my Twitter that often.
You got two tweets.
But, yeah.
It's Duke_Nukem1.
Yep, that's my Twitter, and you can also contact me at DukeNukem, that's two words. For Steam, we can play Left 4 Dead 2, Dawn of War 2, Chaos Rising.
All right, well, there we go. That's about it. Thanks for watching. We'll see you again in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.